Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
It's just the two of us today.
I know, it's so quiet. The house is empty.
It
Christmas is over.
is really quiet, like even Twitter this morning. Usually, because I'm an early bird, I go on Twitter and at least usually the London people are out and about.
Yeah, I love it. I love waking up when it's all London Twitter. It's like a whole new world.
But today, nothing. Nada.
I don't know. I feel like every time I turn on Twitter lately, it's a new round of people screaming at each other over Wolf of Wall Street. It's become like clockwork lately.
It is, and but we have generously decided not to discuss Wolf of Wall Street yet.
We are, I mean, for me personally at least, I'm just waiting until Joe gets to see it because I am dying to see how what he thinks of it once he finally sees it, and then we'll have a proper knockdown drag out.
Because he doesn't want to see it, right?
Yeah,
That's the whole
he's
issue.
I don't know that I've ever seen someone so like bothered by a movie that he has not yet seen, and I'm super interested to see what happens when he actually sees it.
But speaking of London earlier, we will be traveling there because we decided to discuss Saving Mr. Banks instead.
Which I can't believe we haven't talked about yet.
I know. I was just like, can that be true that we haven't discussed it? But I think it is true.
Yes.
So I don't actually know your opinion on it at all.
Well, so I recorded a review of it for Fighting in the War Room a week or two ago, and I had seen it maybe a month ago and hadn't really given it much thought since then. I didn't review it, so it just kind of was a thing that existed in my brain. And then it was funny, like reviewing it with my two co-hosts who both just loathed it, like really tore into it. And I found myself not really able to disagree with anything that they said, even though I walked out of the movie being like, well, that was kind of disappointing, but it was fine. But I do think. But the more, since it hasn't become a hit, and since it kind of seems, I mean, I haven't really looked in the numbers, but it's not really taking off, right?
Right, but it's not flopping either. Originally,
Yeah.
people were like, oh, it's a huge flop, but that's not true.
Okay. But it's still the idea that it's this hagiography of Disney by Disney. And then the more that people write stories about the real P.L. Travers, and I kind of knew going into it that this was really glossing up the story of what happened when she came to LA and like how she felt about the final product, and basically links her the widely reported story of her crying at the premiere of the movie to her feelings about her father, which is kind of simplistic for me. And I mean, the more that I think about that, and the less and the further away I get from Emma Thompson being incredibly delightful, and I think Tom Hanks being pretty delightful, I feel like that movie just really barely exists for me. And it doesn't make me mad the way it has made a lot. I mean, I've read some really excellently written takedowns of this, and I don't feel quite that kind of rage, but I think I'm grateful that it seems to be falling down in the Oscar race, because if it was like steamrolling its way to Best Picture, I think I'd be pretty furious about it.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it actually. But one thing that I mean, it is one of those movies where every criticism of it, I was like, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm a big Mary Poppins fan and I just thought it was really fun. And I did, one thing that I do find interesting and a little suspect is the way critics are, saying, oh, it's just glorifying, like, the corporation, daddy corporation always knows best, and those like artists who can't get their, shit together, they should just give in to the man, as if the movie is explicitly endorsing Disney's point of view and showing that she shouldn't have had any of these concerns. And
Oh, go ahead.
the reason I have trouble with that is, I know it's way off topic since we said we weren't going to discuss it, but Wolf of Wall Street, the debate on that is that no, Scorsese's not endorsing these things by presenting them. And I was like, where is the line then? Because I think Emma Thompson is doing a really good job of not explicitly endorsing that this was a great experience for her.
I think Emma Thompson, yeah, I would agree that she does that. But I do think that the existence of Mary Poppins, the movie, kind of implies from the very start that she's wrong and the corporation is right. That you know that the goal that they're working toward, and we all kind of want Mary Poppins to exist. So it does have us rooting against her. And then the parts where she gets on board, like there's a scene where the Sherman Brothers play "Let's Go Fly a Kite," and it's really lovely. I really like that scene a lot. And you're really excited, and she gets in on the fun, and you're finally like, oh yeah, she is enjoying this thing that we have all enjoyed for decades. So I feel like, and on one level, I think the film does leave room for Emma Thompson to kind of undercut this sense that Disney was right all along. But I do think the movie moves toward that conclusion. There's that scene where he flies to London to kind of bare his soul to her, and she's convinced to let the movie be made. And then at the premiere, you see that everyone, including her, as the movie implies, is happy with how it turned out. So, like, she was the stick in the mud. But it doesn't seem like... It's unclear to me, based on the movie, like, what she was able to contribute. Like, it seems mostly like she was a hurdle they had to get over.
Hmm.
Like, they even took away the mustache that she insisted...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I did not...
Was it, she insisted he didn't have a mustache, or that he did have a mustache?
That he didn't.
Oh, okay.
That he didn't, because she wanted him to look like her father, you know. But, I don't know. Colin Farrell's character. I just never got the sense from Emma Thompson's performance that she was pleased with the result of the movie. Like, and I love that bit where she cries and he's... You know, he's like, it'll be okay or whatever, because it's such like a cross purposes because he still doesn't really understand her. I just think it's a little richer than people are giving it credit for.
Okay.
And I also think that the inverse idea that the corporation's always wrong, I think which is the implication in critics being so angry about this.
Yeah.
Is also problematic because, you know, film is a collaborative art form, and what I took from it somewhat is that this couldn't exist at all without her very, very specific vision, and the movie was more about artistic compromise and collaboration than it was about, like, oh, just sell your soul to the corp. I just didn't get that at all from it, and that's what people... But it makes it such an easy target, and so I think people are just kind of being mean.
I mean, I did feel more kindly toward this version of Walt Disney than I think a lot of people did. You know, there are people who are like, why isn't it showing the anti-Semitism? And it's like, who cares? Like, that doesn't really have anything to do with this story. and I like Tom Hanks in it. I mean, all of the scenes between Emma Thompson and Tom Hanks, I would have watched, two more movies about just that.
Yeah.
Really, my bigger problem with it came in the flashback scenes to Australia with Colin Farrell, where it's kind of... You know, early in the movie, you see her get a fruit basket that's full of pears, and she refuses to eat the pears. And you're like, okay, I guess we're going to learn why she won't eat the pears. And then at the very end of the movie, you kind of get this reveal of why she won't eat pears. It's just like, it's a familiar story about a girl growing up with a father that she adores. And, you know, you can see his problems and she can't. And, like, you kind of know the inevitable conclusion of that story. And then it doesn't really go anywhere different with it. And then you get the introduction of the real life Mary Poppins, played by Rachel Griffiths, who for like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, tell me you did not want more of Rachel Griffiths for this entire movie.
Oh, yeah, I totally wanted more.
But that was the only part of the Australia scenes that I was like, yes, please give me more of this. Because otherwise, I just felt like it was taking away from this really interesting, really realized 60s Disney backlot. And, I mean, maybe it's just, and I think you're probably like me, where you're like, more behind Hollywood stories, please.
Uh-huh.
But I would have wanted so much more of the modern stuff and way less of this explicating her backstory, which I feel like Emma Thompson could have done through performance. And we could have had none of that story at all.
Yeah, I mean, I would, you know, heartily agree with that. I don't think it's a great movie at all. I just think it's an easy target movie.
It's definitely an easy target.
And I always feel defensive for those movies, just because I just don't understand why people think it's... It almost feels like critics feel like the advocacy should be about, like, oh, an easy target, I will shoot it. Whereas, like... You know, why? Like, there are bigger fish to fry. Like, I just don't...
So it's like picking out a Twilight movie. Like,
yeah, just...
Yeah.
Only this one is about the cinema, so I would much rather people be interested in, you know, its depiction of, you know, those rehearsal sequences or whatever than just sort of the broad, overarching, you know, themes that, you know... Disney knew best. Like, I don't know. I just think people are getting really upset about something that is just not that worth getting upset about.
Now imagine if it was doing better in the Oscar race. Can you imagine the level of upset we'd be dealing with?
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't like the implication that... Because basically, if you really follow it through, what people are implying is that it would be better if Mary Poppins didn't exist.
Hmm.
Which I think is ridiculous because it's such a great classic.
Yeah, and that is a fair point, that it's like you can have a movie that pays respect to the woman who is really against the movie existing while knowing as a modern person that their overcoming her wishes in this specific case was worth it.
Right. Or that, and what I took from it, and again, maybe I'm projecting because I, you know, I love Mary Poppins, but what I also took from it is it wouldn't even be half as good of a movie it was if she wasn't forcing them to really work hard at it.
Now, I like that idea, but I'm just trying to remember where I saw that in the movie.
Well, see, that again, I could be projecting that onto
yeah.
it.
I mean, I'm glad to hear you defending it because I do think, you know, like, it is such an easy punching bag.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many really complicated auteur-driven movies out there this year that I feel like my theory is that because there's no, like, the artist King speech feel-good front-runner because maybe Mr. Banks didn't become that, the critics are just ganging up on each other, like, starting gang wars over who likes 12 Years a Slave or Gravity more. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I think that...
Or now that, and now it's shifted to Wolf of Wall Street versus American Hustle. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But I think that, like, studio-created prestige movies like this that have really good performances. I mean, I think Paul Giamatti is really great in this kind of part that really should have been nothing. I mean, it does bug me that the direction is basically non-existent. Like, John Lee Hancock has not proven himself to be a giant talent. But I do, like, the tradition of movies like this deserves to be upheld. Like, it does deserve to be considered seriously when you're right. A lot of people are just really ready to tear into it and move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, like, give it a chance.
I mean, would you tell people to go see it?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
I mean, I get the criticisms, and I think some of them are totally well-grounded.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
It is fun.
I think there is room for movies that are fun in the marketplace, that are maybe not smart.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, you know, fun. Like, I don't know. I just don't need everything to be a heavy auteurist picture.
Just turn off your brain and go to the movies.
But that's not what I'm asking.
I know.
But yeah, that's typically, like, I guess that's what people say about, you know, people when people don't like action movies or whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's always there's a lot of, you know, my brain is bigger than yours this time of year. It's like,
yeah.
Well, you can't handle Wolf of Wall Street, say, or you know, if you like saving
you
Mr.
just don't get it.
Yeah.
You're not smart enough to get it.
Do you think that, I mean, to go back to strict Oscar pronunciation, do you think that the movie's kind of soft landing is going to affect whether or not Emma Thompson gets in that race, or is that not going to change?
Unlike a lot of people who I think the feelings about the movie are influencing who they think is vulnerable in, you know, certain races,
mm-hmm.
I don't even remotely think she's vulnerable to miss out.
I mean, this does seem like exactly the kind of movie that's going to come away with 6 nominations on Oscar morning, and everyone's going to be like, "What?" And then,
or just her, you know?
I
just don't think she's in any danger of missing. Like, I think she's more of a lock than Meryl Streep or Judi Dench.
Yeah,
I mean, she's so charming in person. She's been working her ass off for the movie. She's the best thing about it by far.
Yeah.
And it's a big part, and people haven't seen her in a long time, so it's not even, like, you can't be sick of her. You can't feel like she's, like, over-rewarded.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly.
Like, there's just, I just don't see why people wouldn't vote for her.
What does make me sad about the potential, like, you know, low status of Saving Mr. Banks is that it might mean she doesn't get a lead role for a long time after this, which would make me so sad.
Well, I think it's doing well enough that, you know, if she wants a lead role again,
yeah,
it shouldn't be a problem. Maybe it wouldn't be a super expensive movie, but that was always going to be
the case. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I just want to see more of her if at all possible. So if, go see Saving Mr. Banks so that we can get more Emma Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, people love to, like, bug Meryl, you know, they love to diss Meryl Streep when they don't see other, and I'm guilty of it myself sometimes, when they don't see other actresses, you know, of that age group, but I don't, like, it's not just Meryl Streep, like, it seems like late 50s, over 60s, there's like 3 people,
yeah.
3 or 4 people that get all the parts.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like Helen Mirren, Judi Dench, Meryl Streep, and Maggie Smith.
Yeah. Don't you remember when we were fantasy casting in the August Osage County movie, and we were like, think of all the people besides Meryl Streep who could get that part, and then it went to Meryl Streep.
Right.
I think I was really into the idea of it being Glenn Close.
I was really into the idea. I knew she was too young for it, but I thought Joan Allen would be spectacular
Oh
in
my
that
God.
part.
Well, Meryl Streep's too young for it, so really.
Yeah.
When they reboot August Osage County, which of course is going to happen.
Maybe Joan Allen can magically reappear in the cinema.
Yeah, there we go.
So we're both well, I mean, are you would you recommend Saving Mr. Banks to people?
I mean, I think I would recommend it to certain people and not to others. I think there's so much great stuff out there. And I've been spending a lot of time being like, no, see 12 Years a Slave. I know it sounds hard, but it's really worth it. I think it's pretty skippable on most levels, but if you're interested in seeing like what is probably going to get this Best Actress nomination, like it's not, I do recommend going in with an open mind and allowing yourself to enjoy it. But I was so frustrated by the way that the movie kind of kept losing pace and it kept going back to Australia when I felt it wasn't necessary. So like setting aside all of the Hollywood stuff, that's where it really drove me the most crazy. And I would imagine it might drive other people crazy too. So it's more of a mixed bag for me than for you.
But keeping with Disney, we haven't discussed Frozen yet either.
Which is also crazy because you and I both saw it in like crazy junket land. And did you also go ice skating?
I did not, no.
Oh my God, you missed out.
I know. Ice skating terrifies me though. You know that movie In the Cut? That Jane
Oh,
Campion movie?
yeah, there's ice. I thought it was about boxing.
No, you're thinking of Against the Ropes. You've got your
Oh.
wrong Meg Ryan happening.
Like early 2000s Meg Ryan vehicle.
Jane Campion's Against the Ropes. I can't imagine her doing a boxing picture. Now I'm gonna obsess over that all day.
Okay, please do. Please give me a treatment for that.
But no, there's this scene in it, like a fantasy sequence, where they're like, vintage, like footing and a sort of a dream, cinema sequence where they're ice skating and somebody's legs get run over
Oh my God.
and like sliced off by someone on skates because it's sort
What?
of a surreal like dream sequence,
Oh, but
right?
it's like the kind of nightmarish image you can't get rid of.
Right. But the thing is, when I saw it in the theaters, like the first time, I don't know if I audibly screamed, but like I was so upset because every time I've been ice skating, because I have been a few times in my life, I have had that exact fear, but I have never
Yeah.
heard anybody discuss it or seen it visualized or anything.
Oh, that's terrifying. That's movie power right there.
Yeah, so
So now
from
seeing
Frozen
Frozen
to In
was
the Cut,
yeah.
natural double feature.
Was this just your like nightmare brought to life? All this ice skating and ice and talking snowmen?
No. It was my nightmare brought to life that this is the only Wicked movie I'm ever gonna get because it was so wicked, the animated
I
musical.
know it's really when so Idina Menzel's big number Let It Go, which everyone's probably actually I had to convince an 8-year-old. I was like, no, that's not Demi Lovato singing it in the movie. That's her at the end credits. And I felt like I had done a mitzvah by teaching an 8-year-old Idina Menzel's name. I think every time anyone who's heard that song is just like, oh, so this is the Defying Gravity song, which, it's kind of hilarious that the filmmakers don't really even want to acknowledge that because it's so obviously what's going on. But if this is the only Wicked movie we get, I think that's probably okay. I kind of like this being, I mean, I obviously let's get a Wicked movie, but I like this as a spin on that idea.
I do too. It's just funny to me that it purports to be the Snow Queen when it's like really nothing like
Oh yeah.
even
I've never read that
remotely.
fairy tale, have you?
I haven't read it, but I have a friend who is a very like a Russophile, and he is really obsessed with that particular fairy tale. So he was like walking me through like every line in it, basically, of what happens, and it's just like nothing even remotely like the movie.
The aforementioned 8-year-old is my cousin's daughter who saw this movie while I was home for Christmas, and I had this great experience of talking to her about this and being like, yeah, you do think she's going to have to kiss the boy in the end, and yeah, it is different from that. And it was so like you can kind of write or think objectively about how it's giving all these good like messages for princess obsessed little girls, but like watching it actually in action made me feel so good about this movie, which I already really liked. I got a huge amount of enjoyment out of it because I love musicals and princesses and all that. But it really is working. It's doing exactly what it said it was going to do. And the way that it is subversive in that way, while also still being really glossy and really fun, it's a really impressive balancing act, in addition to the animation being great and acting and having some great songs. I'm kind of excited about the way that it's been coming out into the world and really pulling off its pretty, not inventive strategy. You know, there's plenty of subversive princess movies, but this one seems to be working in a way that mm-hmm. a lot of them haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true. Like, there were a lot of moments in it where I thought, this is really not working. Like, it's in my brain was going, mm-hmm. you know, reject, because I could see the gears, you know?
Yeah.
But it just, I couldn't. Like, I tried to reject it a little, and I just, like, got swept up in it. Because there are elements of it that I think, oh, well, this is, you know, this is insert point B here. Like, it is a formula movie.
Definitely.
But somehow, it just totally, you know, flies over that.
Well, it's got a ton of charm. Mm-hmm. It's got really great voice performances. I mean, were you as surprised by Josh Gad as I was?
Oh, that he was funnier?
Yes!
More funny than annoying?
I was prepared for him to be intolerable. Yeah. And then it turned out to be really a good sidekick. And his song, I think he Let It Go is a great song, but I think he may have the second best one. Uh-huh. The song about what a snowman does in summertime. And Jonathan Groff is probably cuter than... he deserved to have a song, at least. We can talk about that. But I thought the both Kristen Bell and Idina Menzel did a really good job. Like, there's really... these characters feel very real, mm-hmm. which is not easy to do within that kind of formula if you're a grown-up who's kind of seeing the seams. And I think that is a part of why it kind of had an emotional impact on me in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I love Jonathan Groff's performance, too. I think that his self-duet, I think, is really great, even if it's only 1 minute long.
Yeah, it's really weird that there's only that.
Yeah, but I think that scene is so cute, and not just cute, but sort of clever, which is happening a lot in the movie. Mm-hmm. The one, and I love all the stuff with the prince that Anna falls in love with.
Yeah.
And I love how it subverts that whole thing, because, you know, people are, I don't know, like, for, I assume we can spoil things because...
Yeah, I mean, it's made like $1 billion dollars at this point.
But yeah, so, like, there was, I have heard some reactions like, oh, you could see that coming a mile away. And I'm like, but really, if you're being honest with yourself, because people in Disney movies and in normal movies...
Fall in love
instantaneously in all of those movies, and it's never presented as something you should be suspicious of.
Yeah, I got to tell this 8-year-old being like, yeah, so then you know when like a boy tells you he loves you and you've just met him, don't listen to him. It was and the people who matter to you more are your family. And I was like, this is great. I mean, this is not a problem for them yet, but hopefully they will remember this down the line.
Yeah, I mean, because it is really such a different message than you usually get.
Yeah. The fact that song, like when you hear, like the song that they sing together is kind of dippy when you first hear it, and you're like, okay, this is cute. It's kind of lightweight compared to everything else that's going on. And then that makes sense within the context of what the movie's about.
And her sort of head first rush into it makes sense too.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that they have this sister relationship and they have these sisters who really are dramatically different, but both pretty... like valuable to the audience. Like you see the differences in them and you root for both of them in really different ways. It's good character work mm-hmm. all around.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons it transcends sort of its like building block template, is that the character arcs really work.
Yeah.
And they don't feel like maybe they're programmed, but they feel more like full characterizations as opposed to, this is the headstrong heroine.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have two different headstrong heroines.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm trying to remember a Disney movie that's done that recently. Like, that's a really rare thing.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, that's completely rare.
And then you see the marketing that's, like, all of them buried under the snow and, like, giving equal footing to the reindeer. And you're like, oh, they're terrified of having a movie about two women.
Yeah. Unfortunately, since it's been such a colossal hit, you know they're going to do that. They're going to keep doing that every time.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, you have to have a funny snowman if you're going to have a story about girls.
No, but you have to... you're going to have to... all the future ones are going to also have to pretend that it's not about the girls.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why Tangled was called Tangled and not Rapunzel. It's heartbreaking.
Which I think is dumb because, you know, I get it from, like, a superficial, like, we have to get all the quadrants into the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, word of mouth shows how just how stupid that is, because like in this day and age, like, word gets out about movies instantly, and you can see with Frozen how strong the word of mouth is, because you can look at like the percentage drops in the box office.
Yeah.
And usually from week to week for movies, it's between like 40 to 50%. That movie is dropping like 16% a week. That's insane. Like, it's going to make a kajillion dollars.
Yeah, that was basically my first thought when I walked out of it. But I think I also said that about White House Down, so I'm not necessarily the best predictor of America's taste these days.
I have never been the best predictor. Remember that story I was telling on the other podcast about Strange Days with Ralph Fiennes and Angela Bassett? It's going to be huge.
You made everyone get to the theater an hour early.
I know. So I've always been a bit skewed, but like, I'm not that interested in box office, but I do know, like, some basics about it, and, that the percentage drops is a big deal.
Yeah, like, and that's a really interesting thing to follow. Like, that's a way more telling about a movie than opening weekend box office, because, like, Wolf of Wall Street has become this really interesting thing where it's a hit, but people hate it, so I'm curious about what's going to happen to it in a week, mm-hmm. Whereas Frozen's kind of doing the opposite.
Well, yeah, because Frozen, it's in, third week or something, and now...
Probably more than that.
And it's number one again?
Yeah. Poor Hobbit. Nobody cares about the Hobbit.
Well, why should they?
We are not talking about... Did you even see the Hobbit?
I did not, no.
Yeah, I actually did see it, but yeah.
I got really, like, snobby about it. Like, I was done with Middle Earth in 2003, even though I loved Return of the King.
I know. I have such a same problem. Like, there are moments in The Hobbit where I'm just like, oh, I remember loving this world, and then being like,
yeah, I just, my thing with The Hobbit last time, was that last year?
Yeah.
Or was it 2 years ago?
It was decades ago. Okay. You've been living in Hobbit world forever.
Well, I didn't want to spoil, like, that period of my life, which for 3 years I was just really obsessed with Lord of the Rings and loved all three movies. And I just felt like it had reached its natural conclusion. And I realized when you have billions on the table, just nobody lets anything conclude.
Yeah.
But I feel so great about the decision not to continue with it. And my boyfriend was actually watching The Hobbit on HBO or something the other day. And I didn't realize what was on at first. I thought he had put in, like, a DVD of Lord of the Rings or something.
You got really excited for a second?
No, I just, like, it was on in the background, because the way my living room is set up, my back is actually to the TV when I'm working. So I just heard, like, the Middle Earthy things,
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and then so I watched, like, a few minutes of it, and I was just like, oh, yeah, I made the right decision.
Yeah. Seeing The Hobbit made me really want to rewatch Lord of the Rings just to, like, remember how well it was all done before. But what was crazy about The Hobbit, like, talking about box office, is that it's making huge amounts of money everywhere. Like, even though it's not even doing that well, it's still making a crazy amount of money. So,
well, that's why people are never, any of those franchises, people will just never leave them alone.
I know. It's exhausting. I'm actually, like, I loved Avatar, and I'm kind of dreading the next two Avatars.
Yeah.
I really hope they don't, break my heart.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way with Avatar. I was just crazy in love with it, and not even ironically.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know it's not, cool to love it or whatever.
No. It's weird how, like, it's become almost forgotten as a huge movie because it was so uncool to love it. Don't worry, I'm right there with you.
But I was the same way with Titanic. Like, I just love Titanic.
Yeah.
And I mean, come back around with Titanic. Now people just admit that they love it.
Yeah.
But for a while, you just were not supposed to love it.
Well, to be a boy who loved it, too, is hard.
Yeah.
So, you're brave. Your courage inspires us all.
We both love Frozen, but just out of curiosity, is there anything you didn't like about it?
The one thing I wanted to bring up with you was the songs, because I think there are some great songs, and I think there are some kind of weak songs overall. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the number with the trolls, I know a lot of people who hated it, but it's kind of a silly, like, there's nothing, like, if this were a proper musical, having that one great song would not be enough. And some of the lyrics can be kind of awkward, like, there's a lot of modern language kind of used to spice it up that make them sound weird. And then the songs kind of drop off, like, there's no number for Jonathan Groff, and there's nothing really after the halfway point in terms of music. And that kind of disappointed me, and I don't know if that's just because I love musicals and want more of them. I mean, did you have the same problem?
Yeah, in that I did not think the musical score was all that strong, and
yeah.
I've been reading a lot of reviews. They're like, the music's so great. Like, I think Tangled is a much better song score.
Mm. I'm trying to remember, like, I remember the big Mother Knows Best song from Tangled.
And I See the Light.
Yeah, that one where they're on the boat. That was a great song.
But yeah, so even if those are the only two great songs in Tangled, there's still, I think having two great songs is better than having one really good one.
Yeah. So you don't even feel like Let It Go is a great song?
I mean, I enjoy it like anybody else does. It's like a fun anthem song.
Yeah.
But I don't, is it great songwriting? I don't really, yeah. I wouldn't really say that.
And it's weird because it's got the Book of Mormon team in Avenue Q. I mean, and the songs in Book of Mormon are incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, like, I'm not going to give Trey Parker, Matt Stone all the credit for that because I think that Robert Lopez is hugely talented. But I don't know if, like, they didn't have as much free reign, like, they were too constricted by the format or what. But yeah, the weakness in the songs did, I was kind of, like, ready to be swept away by them. And mm-hmm. then they just didn't quite get
well,
there.
Yeah, and then you have that whole, like, half hour without any music.
Yeah, and there could have been really great songs. Like, when it starts getting more serious, like, there's uh-huh. there's some really strong themes that that kind of repeat in the songs, and there's a really great way to use those and subvert them, and yeah. I mean, it seems like the same thing, where they're afraid of girl movies and they're afraid of musicals, which is crazy, because their bread and butter is musicals.
I know, and girl movies.
I know.
For Disney. I mean, it's not true of Pixar, but it's definitely true of Disney. It's
yeah.
like, they make billions every year based on girly stuff, and then yeah. they pretend that they don't make girly stuff.
And they're gonna put all their money behind Star Wars, yes. which lots and lots of girls will see.
Yeah. I mean, like, the weird thing about Frozen is when I talk about it, I, like, there's a lot of elements that I just have issues with, but then mm-hmm. it just, as a whole, it's one of those things that the sum is so much greater than any of its parts to me.
Yeah,
it just,
absolutely.
Like, somehow just works.
Yeah.
Because those, what you're talking about with, like, the songs falling off, and then, you know, that big section where there are no songs, and the song's not being necessarily, like, strong. Like, all of these things, like, you can see all the problems, but it just doesn't matter in the end.
No. Because there's so much to enjoy. Like, there's so many things that it does right. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. it's just doing more right in the non-musical portions.
Well, and I think, you know, I've said this a million times, and everybody else, and it's hardly an original thought, but, like, a strong, like, ending or climax
mm-hmm.
can forgive so many sins for,
yeah,
for
absolutely.
Like, any type of narrative art form. And the final sort of reveal where you realize that the love story, it is really not going to be about falling in love with a man, which is so different than Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
is so beautiful. Like, I was completely surprised.
I know. I was so fearful of that ending and about it being about her falling for Jonathan Groff's character.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's kind of in court, he's, like, really not part of that ending at all. Like, the climax is just those two.
Mm-hmm.
You've kind of got her, the Elsa, searching for her sister in the snow, and then the boy is kind of ineffective.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like, when everything's wrapped up, you kind of see Anna and Kristoff, right?
Yeah.
You see them kind of, like, getting to know each other. And it's
yes.
such a great way to end that. And I was so, like, thrilled. And I again, like, talking to these children, being like, yeah, your sister, her love is more important than any boy you're going to meet. It's so, I don't know, it's weird that it's taken that long to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like it a lot. The movie.
Yeah. Frozen does not need your help, but go see it anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. I will see it again, I'm sure, as people are like, oh, I've already seen it twice.
I have memorized all the words. I'm sure Let It Go is, like, at every karaoke room in Koreatown already.
Right.
I'm not brave enough to sing it, but I'm sure somebody else is.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to discuss when we get our co-host back, I guess.
We do. Well, what is remaining that we haven't discussed, I guess? August Osage County had such a protracted release.
I know.
That I feel like we've discussed it a million times, but not in proper context.
I know. And I was actually, so I brought the screener home for Christmas, and my some family members were watching it, and I got very sucked into it. I was very, I was enjoying a kind of second half watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, Karina Longworth, who's a was a critic for the LA Weekly, has a book about Meryl Streep coming out that I got a advanced copy of, which is awesome. And I have been having such a good time reading all this, you know, detail, this critical looks at Streep's early career. Mm-hmm. And it made me watch August Osage County and just be like, my God, she really is great. And nobody ever wants to talk about it. So maybe we should.
I feel like people always want to talk about how great
I know,
she
but
is.
Then it's like, oh, Meryl Streep, whatever. And like, I mean, August Osage County has gotten some pretty harsh reviews, and I feel like she is still really great in it, even though it's a movie about yelling and screaming, but really funny, well written.
Oh, I thought she was really good in it too. Like, I mean, I don't really have issues with her performance, and I do think it's a little weird that this particular performance is the one where people are like suddenly snippy with her.
Yeah.
But
well, the Iron Lady just kind of beat everybody down.
Yeah,
like,
I
right.
think that's what it was. It was very similar. I think very, very similar to what happened with Kate Winslet with The Reader.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Where it's just like if you campaign so relentlessly that they're just like, here, take it.
Yeah.
Just get out of our hair.
I know. And it's gonna be the same. Like Kate Winslet, I mean, she hasn't given the great follow up performance to The Reader. Unless I'm forgetting something. But Meryl Streep is going to keep knocking it out of the park, and then we're going to have given her that Oscar for The Iron Lady. It's going to be like, all right, giving it to somebody else. It's such weird math.
Yeah, it always is weird math, which is why I wish she would have just won for Julie and Julia.
Oh, that would have been so fun.
Because there wasn't, you know, clearly like the two best nominees were never going to win that year. So it's like, why not?
Who were the other nominees that year? Now I'm forgetting.
Carey Mulligan in An Education.
Oh, okay.
And Gabby Sidibe in Precious.
And that was the year that Sandra Bullock won, right?
Yeah. And those two, the two young, you know, usually I'm rooting for the older lady just because Hollywood's so mean to them.
Yeah.
But that year, I thought the two young girls were way better than their competition.
Well, but if Sandra Bullock hadn't won that Oscar, like, where would it, maybe we wouldn't have The Heat. Maybe we wouldn't have Gravity. Like, it'd be tough.
Yeah, I mean, it would, you know, maybe she'd be a threat to win this year if she hadn't won.
Yeah, she definitely would be. Although there's nobody, I mean, because it's the all previous winners lineup, basically, there's no one who I feel super strongly about needing to win. Although,
which is why it's going to be so easy for Cate Blanchett to win.
Yeah, but that's, I think that's basically fine.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
She's great in Blue Jasmine, and she probably deserves to have a lead actress Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, she's so good in that movie that, you know, it, like Frozen, it's one of those movies where I have some issues with, but mm-hmm. like once I start watching, I just don't care because it's just so involving.
Yeah. I would really like to see it again. I haven't, I only saw it the one time over the summer.
Oh, it holds up well.
I would bet it does. And then like no one talks about Sally Hawkins being pretty terrific.
I love her.
I know. I would love for that supporting campaign to take off, but I don't think it will.
Well, she's being blocked by a lead performer, but anyway.
Well, we have lots of time to talk about Best Actress and everything else. I mean, yeah, the Globes are sooner than we think.
Yeah, I have the most insane schedule coming up. I do not know how I will survive.
You're going to Sundance.
Well, because I'm flying out for there's the Golden Globes on the 12th, then I'm mm-hmm. flying out for the Critics' Choice Awards on the 16th.
Fun. I've always wanted to do that.
Which is also the Oscar nomination day. And then the very next day, then I'm flying to Sundance.
That's insane. You're such a jet setter.
I know. This year, all of a sudden.
Well,
I'm racking up the frequent flyer miles.
Please enjoy the Critics' Choice Awards on my behalf. I have wanted to go ever since I've been a member and have not been able to make it work, partly because of Sundance.
I just really want the experience of being in the room because I'm always like I find watching it on television so painful.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it would have to be better in the room, right?
I mean, I think people who go have a great time.
Okay. Yeah.
Please live tweet. But right. We'll have a podcast before then, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, thanks for having this little duet with me today, Katie.
Yeah, this was fun. Who needs Nick and Joe? I'm just kidding.
You have no
Nick,
power here.
Please come back, Nick and Joe. We need you desperately.
Well, Nick and I did one by ourselves, too. I don't remember what we talked about. But yeah, I mean, it's whatever. It's a fun change of pace. And I feel like I don't see you enough.
I know.
Since you moved to Brooklyn.
I know. It's so far away.
I hope that every time that you mention your move to Brooklyn, you do it in Cate Blanchett's Blue Jasmine style.
To Brooklyn. I don't think that did her justice, but
New York, Park Avenue.